City, Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hello, and welcome to the USA Volleyball Show, episode 65, Road to 100, baby. Stephen, what's up, man?
USA.
Made by the few. These colors don't. I'm just kidding. That's a TikTok. I got to stop watching TikToks. Everything I refer to now is from my TikTok, basically. It's kind of embarrassing.
Great night in sports last night.
Great night in sports.
At the time of this recording. Of course. I mean, we'll mention it a little bit later, too. But the U.S. women's sitting team qualifying for the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games.
Yes.
Man. Let's go.
Oof. First of many, hopefully. First of many.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
And, oh my gosh, such a cool moment at the end there, because guess who got the winning point? The winning block, Whitney Doste.
Oh, yes.
Our guest on the last podcast.
I'm noticing a trend here. I don't know. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Embassy. Yeah.
And a serve.
That's my best.
And a serve.
That's my best impression. And then Whitney, hey, I don't know. Maybe it's beneficial to be a guest of the pod.
Looking to win a big game. Athletes out there looking to win a big game, come on the podcast. Something magical might happen.
It was so funny, too. Back when I used to work for all the teams in L.A., they were like, man, if you guys want to win a championship, hire Clarence. Because like, I remember the first year of my when I was with the Clippers, we went like 6 with the Warriors. And it was like right after they let go of Lob City. So everybody was like, oh my gosh. And then like first year with the Lakers
on line. Lob City.
I wasn't going to get one. I know, right? But yeah, I don't know. This podcast is magical, you guys. I don't know. We're doing good things.
Doing good things indeed. Yeah, a little non-volleyball too. Hometown Denver Nuggets clinching Western Conference Finals.
I thought you were talking about the Dallas Stars. Man, nobody cares about them.
Well, they haven't clinched yet, so I'll save them for last. One game away.
But yeah, Nuggets in the Western Conference Final for the first time, and I can't even remember. I think it's been a while. A lot of these teams, man, it's going to be some pretty good playoff basketball. Oh, that is
fast. Oh, that's true.
I was just saying, hey.
Lara Fawcett mentioned we won gold. Olympic gold, women's Olympic gold after still, the podcast. So
they waited for my medal. Yeah. ship that over to my address. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, man.
So with the Nuggets tie, Chris Marlow, former guest on the podcast, yes. Friend of the pod, Chris Marlow, announcer for the Denver Nuggets. So congratulations to him as well. I'm sure that was fun calling that game.
Give us a shout out, you know, during game one. We appreciate it.
Sure. You know, if the Nuggets are looking to win, you know, the NBA championship, maybe Chris Marlow comes on, you know.
Throw some courtside tickets our way. We need at least 6 tickets. At least 6. Of course, I.
But we got a great episode for y'all today. Before we get to that, Clarence, how are you doing? You traveling anywhere soon? You got opens coming up. Are you warming up to get on the court?
You know, I don't think I'm going to be on the team this year.
No?
All the teams that we were kind of talking about fell through, unfortunately. But I will get to coach a few clinics, which is really cool, too. So we have one of the school district teams that our equipment share, Ed Garza, is going to take the lead on. And he and I are basically just going to kind of co-host a clinic. And, you know, we have plenty of coaches in our volleyball on our staff. So that'll be our first one. And then we'll have a second clinic, either going to be immediately following that one or that Friday when play is actually happening. We're going to be off to the side. We're going to get clinic for our Special Olympics North America group as well, too. So,
oh, cool.
It'll be 2 back-to-back clinics, whether it's going to be on the same day or 2 separate days. But yeah, you know, touching on a little grassroots here, you know, might as well take advantage while we got the courts and have some free clinics going on for people. So really good to get a chance to give back a little bit, you know?
That's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. To give back to the volleyball community, the local community there in Dallas, and doing those clinics with the staff. Mm-hmm. hope you have a great time doing that. And I don't know. I think you should just stay loose, get some high knees going.
I'll bring in my shoes. Bring in my shoes just in case.
Maybe wear the knee pads so people know like you're ready to go.
You know, I don't play with knee pads. I have like a little knee sleeve slash brace, but that's
okay.
It.
Okay,
I'm a middle.
Wear them so people know like you're right, you're a player, and then you know, take them off before you get out, where you get out there.
just at the championship desk, full volleyball gear.
There you go. Yeah,
you playing on a team?
Nah, just waiting. Need like a free agent like shirt that you can wear.
Oh my god, that'd be amazing! Like just get a whole team of free agents and just free agent spam.
There you go.
It's a good name. Go.
Stay ready. Stay ready.
What about you? Yeah.
Well,
I've just been here in Springs planning for opens and coaching. Awesome. We started open gyms at Banning. Still nervous for the season. You know, technically, we're on day zero. Open gyms don't really count as official practice days, but we've got some good numbers of people showing up and interest. We've kind of broken our sessions into 9th and 10th graders and 11th and 12th graders that are all incoming in. Yeah, just trying to set a good tone to start from zero with the whole program. But that's basically been it.
Good to hear that. Yeah, that, you know, good turnout so far. It sounds like that's awesome to kind of build up the program a little bit.
Yeah. But what about you? You got any, been doing any traveling? Got any travel plans? I already know the answer to this, but
talk about
a little bit.
Well, this weekend at the time of recording, I'm heading off to Dallas to start warming up for the Open Nationals.
Taking about 2 weeks.
Yeah. My brothers are graduating college, so we'll be celebrating that and then doing Mother's Day with my mom as well that Sunday. And then shout out to all the moms out there listening. And then my wife, Tessa, and I will be going to Destin, Florida for a little baby moon / anniversary trip, just hanging out on the beach there.
I thought you guys were going to celebrate at the players' party that Sunday at Becker.
Dallas. Quick slight change.
We're setting this. You didn't.
Yeah. Well, actually, we'll be phoning in to that. We can do a little address via video, via Zoom. But we will actually not be there.
No. Oh man, we got to adjust everything now. You know, cancel it. We seem like doing.
But keep still do the players' party even without us. It's fine.
It'll be a fun time. Yeah, we're pushing through. We're pushing through.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to hear all about opens when I get back and we talk about it and break it down. Because that is one of my favorite tournaments that USA Volleyball does.
Yeah, hopefully we're growing. We're going to have more teams than last year or something like. And just slow progress. We're getting there. But yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun. Well, let's jump into this episode.
Let's do it.
Now that we got all loosened up here. But you know, speaking of Whitney Doste, as we mentioned at the top, getting that game-winning, match-winning, qualification-clinching block just last night to send the U.S. women's sitting national team to the Paris Paralympic Games in Paris 2024. If you haven't already listened to it, we just had Whitney on the podcast last episode. So check that one out. We caught up with her ahead of the zonal championships that they just clinched Paris 2024 in. We chat with Whitney about her background in standing volleyball, playing professionally overseas, her time at the Tokyo Paralympics, winning gold with that team, of course, and her swimwear company, Wavelength Swimwear, as well, which I believe is going to be at Opens. They'll have a little vendor booth at Opens, so check that out if you are attending Opens in Dallas. A lot from Whitney there. A great conversation with Whitney. Listen to that on all podcast platforms. And you can watch that on usavolleyball.org or the USA Volleyball YouTube channel. Now, news with Hughes.
Now, the one back to I'm just kidding. All right.
reverse.
This is Volleypalooza, but the congratulatory version. So a lot of
congrats of Palooza.
Congrats of Palooza. Here we go. All right. Big news and congratulations to, as we mentioned earlier, the U.S. women's sitting national team on qualifying for the 2024 Paris Paralympic Games. The team defeated Canada 3-1, three sets to one last night in the Paravolley Pan American Zonal Championship in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, which is also on my bucket list of places to visit, by the way.
Oh, yeah. So
glad they did it there. But they are the first U.S. team to qualify for the 2024 games in any sport. So big things being done. Congratulations to them for sure. Wow. Yeah. Big blocks.
I believe that's, and I could be wrong here, but I believe that's first U.S. Paralympic team to qualify in any sport. But got it. Either way, an incredible achievement.
Mm-hmm. And the Volleyball Nations League is coming to the United States. Watch the world's best volleyball athletes in person on home soil, beginning with the men's week 3 leg hosted in Anaheim, California, from July 4th through July 9th. And then watch the women's finals in Arlington, Texas, from July 12th through the 16th. Buy your VNL tickets for Anaheim and Arlington right now. Congratulations to USC for winning back-to-back NCAA Women's Beach National Championships, the three-peat. They did it. USC defeated UCLA to capture its sixth national title and fifth NCAA crown. Special shout-out to USC Women's Beach Volleyball coach, Olympic gold medalist, and USA Volleyball board member, Dane Blanton. Yeah, a lot of back and forth between USC and UCLA. Make sure you're paying attention. Stay with it.
Because keep straight, yeah.
Another congratulations to former guest and friend of the pod, U.S. Men's National Team head coach and head coach of the 2023 NCAA Men's Volleyball National Champion UCLA Men's Volleyball Team, John Sparrow. Yes, the team defeated Hawaii in a thrilling 3-1 victory in the final moment to capture the program's 20th national title and John Sparrow's fourth as a collegiate head coach. The 2023 Beach National Championship will return to Fort Lauderdale, Florida on July 18th through the 23rd. Registration is now open on usabbracketpal.com. All questions, comments, and concerns can be directed to beachevents@usab.org. And for more on all of this and the latest news, visit usavolleyball.org.
All right, on to today's show, we have a Hall of Famer for you today. That's right. We have Olympic gold medalist Ryan Millar on the show for you today. Ryan's being awarded the all-time great indoor player award at this year's Hall of Fame ceremony. Ryan chats with us about his career, his background, shares several stories from his Olympic experiences. He also talks about how he's doing and what he's up to after retiring from the U.S. men's national team and so much more. But enough from us. Here's Ryan. Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. Really excited to have you on this podcast, especially ahead of the Hall of Fame ceremony and banquet that's coming up here soon in Dallas. But of course, for those who went to the Mountain Classic, I believe that was last year or early this last year, you were there and did a little appearance, took some pictures, signed some autographs. What was your experience like there? And how'd you like that?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was cool. I'm glad we were able to set it up because I've got obviously some deep roots in the Salt Lake area, which is where it was at. And I lived in Salt Lake for 26 years before moving down to San Diego. My wife and I live in San Diego now. We've been down here about 2.5 years. But it's cool. My kids still in Utah, northern Utah, so it was good to get back home and see them. And then being at the tournament, it just brought me back to my old club high school days.
Yeah.
Just look at those kids now. And I'm like, man, I was that young one day. And it was cool. You know, it was just, and I saw some old friends that I hadn't seen in a while that still coach. And so it was a good time. Hopefully it won't be the last time. I don't think so.
No, yeah, we'd love to have you at another event. I'm sure Clarence can make that happen.
Oh, yeah.
I think Clarence is the guy to talk to.
That's right.
I wouldn't say all that, but you know, I think Opens would be a good one talking about years forward there too. But I mean, Mountain Classic again is going to be in Denver for 2023. So, you know, not too far from Salt Lake, but hey,
yeah,
if you want to make the trek, you know, I think it'd be great to have you again there. But again, Not my event, so I won't speak. But yeah.
Really quick, I love starting off with just kind of a fun question, but do you have any like fun facts about yourself that maybe fans don't know about you, or you know, maybe a big Desperate Housewives fan or something like that? Something off the wall.
Let's see. I do love 90 Day Fiance. So I don't know if you guys watch 90 Day Fiance, but I'm a pretty dedicated 90 Day Fiance fan. Awesome. My wife and I, we watch that all the time. It's just silly reality show TV, but it's good. It's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I do three things left-handed, and only these three things. I play the guitar left-handed, can't play it right-handed. I shoot pool left-handed, can't shoot it right-handed. And I shoot a gun left-handed, can't shoot it right-handed. And everything else I do right-handed.
And volleyball is right-handed?
Yeah, absolutely. Really? Everything else is right-handed except those three things. So I don't, the brain is weird sometimes, I guess.
Those are some interesting, you know, categories to be.
Oh, tell me about it.
Like, you know, I used to play hockey and I shoot left-handed there. But I would think, you know, yeah, that's a little different. It's a little different.
It is. You know, and then figuring those things out throughout my lifetime was interesting, too. It was like, how come I can't play a guitar like everyone else can? And then I played it left-handed, and I'm like, oh, this feels way better. So, anyways, weird stuff.
Yeah, you're like shooting pool in a pool hall one day, and you're like, I guess I go left-hand for the shot, and you just nail it.
Start hustling some guys.
There you go. Yeah. That's awesome. So interesting. Yeah, maybe it's the mechanic or act of just like holding something. That's why.
Yeah, because it's left like guitar, shooting rifle, shooting pool. They're kind of very similar. Yeah, you're right. Holding it. Maybe it's, I don't know. I had an older brother. He actually tragically passed away in a car accident when I was 10. But he was also left-handed. So I don't know if it was just some genetics somewhere. I don't know. But anyways.
You ever try to play cup pong left-handed? You know,
switch it up a little bit.
Switch up the hands. You know?
I'm telling you, I tried a lot of other things, and everything else, I'm very right-hand dominant. And my youngest son, his name is George. He's 4 years old, about to be 5 years old, and I'm pretty certain he's left-handed because I was just with him, and we took him to like kind of a little arcade thing, and there was a game where you had to throw a ball at those, you know, at the carnival, they have those like plush dolls, and if you hit it, it kind of flips over. Mm-hmm. So he was just rifling balls, and everything was left-handed, and I go, hey, can you try to throw one with your other arm? He's like, no, I like with this one. And I'm like, okay, all right, I see you.
All right. So might be a future lefty middle or lefty center.
That would be interesting. Not too many lefty middles.
I was going to say, I don't know. But yeah.
That's awesome. These middles are annoying. Gosh.
Thinks about it now. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, speaking of middles and volleyball and left-handed and, you know, playing guitar, this is the question we kind of always circle back to, you know, a lot of our first-time guests here on the show. But, I mean, What is your introduction, you know, to the game of volleyball? How did you just start? You know, what was that introduction for you?
So, I grew up in the high desert of Southern California, and my older brother started playing volleyball, and I was much more into basketball at the time. I think I was 11 years old. I was in seventh or eighth grade. And he just started high school and, you know, he wanted to get into it. And being his little brother, he needed someone to kind of beat up on and pepper with and, you know, hit balls at and stuff. And so he's like, hey, you know, you're going to start playing volleyball. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And so that was kind of the start of it. In junior high, I knew I wanted to try three sports. So I was already playing basketball. I was already on the track team. So I'm like, all right, let's get on the volleyball team. And you guys know in Southern California, there's a little bit more opportunity for guys to play volleyball. And my junior high team and obviously my high school team both had volleyball programs. And so that was the start of it. Picked up the game pretty quick. Obviously after that, I really enjoyed playing it. I was surprised in the beginning how much I really enjoyed it and had a really good core group of friends that all played as well. So that kind of, obviously that helped a lot because it kind of became just kind of our friend community thing to do. We would just go play volleyball all the time. So
You said you played three sports, right? And then how long did you continue, you know, playing those three sports until you kind of realized volleyball is, you know, where I should be maybe focusing, you know, maybe all my attention on, or, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's funny because I hate to throw this out, but it's a little bit of a Michael Jordan story. I get it. It's very loose. You know, Jordan was cut from like his junior high basketball team or whatever. So my freshman year of high school, I was only like 5'10", maybe. So I wasn't like tall, but like I wasn't abnormally tall at all. And I tried out for the basketball team and I got cut. And then I obviously made the volleyball team. And I'm like, well, I mean, that's kind of writing on the wall right there. And so I ended up devoting a lot of my time to volleyball and getting a lot better at that time between my freshman and sophomore year of high school. And it just so happened that I also grew 6 inches that year. So I went from 5'10 my freshman year to 6'4 my sophomore year. And obviously that helped a lot with becoming better at volleyball. But the basketball coach came back in my sophomore year and was like, hey, you're going to try out again, right? Knowing that I'm kind of this tall kid.
So like, he was probably kicking himself for
cutting. Oh, totally. Totally was. And by that time, I was like full all into volleyball. And I was like, nah, I'm just going to stick with volleyball. And
that's John, you got it, bro. Good luck.
I know, seriously. Seemed like it worked out for me fairly well in the end. So
yeah, not too bad. The wall behind you. Yeah, that's right.
Seriously.
Yeah, I also was cut from the basketball team, but I didn't have quite the growth spurt that you had. So the coach never came back to me. That's awesome. What hooked you about volleyball? You mentioned your friends. Was it really the friends aspect that kind of hooked you and what made you want to stay with volleyball?
Yeah, you know, that was a huge one. That was really big. I think just generally, I like the technical aspects of volleyball. I liked being able to like work things out. I like that there was I tell people all the time that volleyball is the prototypical team sport. Like it's the ultimate team sport because right. You're constantly depending on your teammates. There's no one person can't do it all because you can't touch the ball after you already touch it. So I really liked the fact that it was a very heavy team sport. And I just really liked competing a lot and trying to win and figure out what it takes to win. And we had a good volleyball program at my high school. So there were pretty high expectations around, you know, winning and trying to figure out how to be competitive. And so all of those things kind of checked my boxes on my growing love for volleyball.
Growing up in Southern California, sorry, Clarence, to cut you off there.
No, go ahead.
Growing up in Southern California, was beach volleyball ever in your consideration, or do you enjoy beach volleyball?
Yeah, I mean, we would go to the beach all the time. I mean, pretty much every weekend, we'd be at the beach playing. We really enjoyed playing doubles, and whether it was on the grass or, you know, in our local park where they'd have sand courts, or going down to, you know, wherever, State Beach, or going driving all the way down to Manhattan or Huntington, we were always at the beach trying to play. So yeah, it was a big part. I really, really enjoyed beach volleyball when I was coming up, but you know, life kind of takes you down the path of staying indoors, and there's a lot of reasons we could probably talk about that, or some people have already talked about that on your right. show before. Yeah. So
I was gonna kind of bring up earlier, you talk about your growing love for the game, but were there any, you know, growing pains, you know, in your development, you know, of just volleyball as a whole, that kind of was like, man, do I really want to play this? Should I go back and give basketball a try? Another coach wanted me to try out for the team again. You know, just any of those moments where it was just like, wow, this is difficult, you know, with it being a team sport and being so technical.
Yeah, you know, not really, just because I could see how much better our team was actually getting year after year in high school. And so like, I knew I wanted to be a part of that. My freshman year, we weren't super good. My sophomore year, we were a little better. And then my junior year, I knew we were going to be a lot better. And so I knew I wanted to just continually be a part of that, be a part of a winning program and do what I could to help that team win. And so, I'll tell you an instance when I did feel like I was like, is this really right for me? And, you know, we would have eventually got there. But right after my first Olympics in Sydney in 2000, you know, we went into the games with pretty high expectations and we dramatically underperformed. I mean, we didn't even win a single match the whole Olympics. And so we finished in last place. And I remember flying back home to the US from Sydney and like, I'm sitting in my seat on this long flight and the USA baseball team is on our flight as well. They just won gold. So they were literally like running up and down the aisles, like high-fiving everyone and like huge party. And I'm, you know, I'm there on the plane after going over and like just feeling horrible. And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, like, man, I don't like this at all. Like, maybe I need to start looking at something else. Like, if this is how it's going to be. But then, you know, then you tap into a little bit of the athlete mindset and you're like, no, like, come on, like we can do better and it's going to be better. And so luckily I stuck with it. But that was a tough time after Sydney. It was not easy.
I could see, yeah, that going both ways too. Like you're on the plane, you just, as you said, lost every match, but another Team USA team is cheering, having a great time on the plane, winning gold, and you could take it as, you know, I don't know if this is right for me, or you could take it as I want to be those guys and be the ones cheering on the plane or having the celebrations after stepping at the top of the podium. But
yeah,
that's really interesting to have that revelation, obviously, and we'll get to it later, but obviously it worked out well to stay into volleyball.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think I have one more follow up that I think Steve and mine want to change gears a little bit, but I mean, it seems like you've like literally steadily through, you know, your high school and collegiate and, you know, professional career, you've always had that mindset, that mentality to where like you're never, well, at least, you know, visually here, what it seems like, you were never overly hard on yourself to the point where you're just like, I'm never doing this again and I'm never going to get better. And, you know, just going into that tank, like, you know, mindset, you know, do you have any just, you know, words of advice or encouragement? And this is the coach in me kind of coming out because I coach a lot of teenagers and, you know, junior volleyball. Do you just have any, you know, words of encouragement or just rethinking that players that are, you know, perfectionists in that realm should really, you know, think about or reconsider when it comes to their approach to the game?
Yeah, you know, first of all, if you're a perfectionist, you're probably not going to be a super great athlete because being in athletics and being at the highest levels, it's never perfect. It's never going to be perfect. It wasn't ever perfect for Jordan and he's the GOAT. It's never perfect for LeBron. He's all-time scoring champion. Like, so you got to have realistic expectations. And I think there's also a thing that athletes do is they disconnect a little bit and they do it really well, because I think as a high functioning athlete, you've got to value your recovery as well. And not even just physical recovery, like you got to disconnect your brain as well, because sometimes you get so locked in on what you're trying to accomplish and do that it becomes hard to disconnect things. And so when you're off the court, you know, you're away from the training room or whatever it is, you got to figure out ways to disconnect your brain. But when you're on the court, it's a different focus to me. I remember my college coach, the late, great Carl McGowan, he used to tell us all the time, hey, if you guys are going to be here, you might as well be here. Meaning, if you're going to choose to be in the gym, putting forth the effort and the work, then go get after it. Give it all you can, because eventually it's going to be done. I mean, it's not like you've been in a practice that lasts forever, even though it's really hard, right? Eventually it's going to be over. Eventually you're going to be able to disconnect. But while you're there, you know, if you're going to choose to be there, give it all you got and then figure out a time to disconnect. And I felt like I did that fairly well. I also really loved the game of volleyball and I always made it really fun. So to me, it was always, I made sure that people laughed in practice and had a good time and we made fun of people and people made fun of me and cracked jokes. And even when you're trying to compete for a gold medal, you're still trying to do that, because if you're not having fun, you're not learning. And you don't want to resent the game as being something that takes too much of your time. You want it to be something that you continually just crave to be a part of. And I felt like I tried my best at being able to do that.
Thank you for sharing that. That was awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kind of switching gears here and kind of going into your career a little bit. What was your path to the men's national team? What was your journey to the US men's national team like?
Yeah. So let's see, my, the end of my sophomore year at BYU is my first experience with the national team. I got invited to go on a tour against China. And, you know, I'm just this young, still in college guy learning the ropes. So I didn't even know what to expect. And it was fun to like be with those guys and see how hard they grinded and what it was going to take. Cause I, at that point, I obviously knew it was something that I was looking forward to doing after I was done with college. And then literally after my senior year was done, we won the national title that year in 99. And then like, literally like just a couple of days later, I was in the gym in Colorado in the Springs, fighting to try to make the team that was going to Sydney, because it's not an easy task being a college kid coming right out of college and immediately trying to take a spot from a guy that's maybe been on the team for like multiple quads. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so wow. It was an uphill climb. I knew it. But what was really interesting is that I didn't know a lot of the dynamics of the ins and outs, even the political jockeying at the Olympic level. And so there's this blissful ignorance around this young kid just trying to come in and do what he could. And, you know, I guess I was good enough. And Doug Beal at the time was our coach. And I think he saw that I was needed to be a part of the team and was able to go and play in those first Olympics in Sydney. But that first year out of college, I didn't even go play overseas because the time was so close to us trying to qualify and get into the games, which we hadn't done yet. We had to go to Canada actually and go qualify. It was cool being in the qualification tournament in Canada. We played Canada in the finals in Canada to qualify. Wow. And Canada was good. They were good at that time too. So it was a pretty fun environment to be a part of. And we ended up obviously beating them and going on and playing in Sydney. So
were there anyone you mentioned, I mean, that's such a quick turnaround for a young athlete straight out of college to going into the Olympics. Was there anyone that you like looked up to early on in those early days on the team, or anyone that kind of helped you, took you under their wing?
Yeah, you know, some of the veteran guys that had been around a little while, like Loy and Dan Landry, some of the old national team guys. John Hayden was on that team as well. And Tom Sorensen, and guys that had already been to 96, and some of the guys that were even in 92, some of the older guys. But so you obviously want to, those guys would kind of show you the ropes. Loy would kind of show you the ropes. I mean, I think he could see that I was going to be somebody that could have a real impact on the team. And so I think he would always give me cool advice, and he'd tell me in practice, hey, like, you know, just keep grinding, you're going to get there. And it was awesome playing with Loy. He's such a massive talent in our game. And he's such a unique player in the evolution of volleyball and what he can do at his height and the way he managed the game. And I was fortunate. I mean, I played 3 Olympic games and every one of those Loy was setting. So it was like, he always made my job a lot easier just because it felt so much easier for me to be able to hit off of taller setters. It was always a challenge to try to connect with smaller setters. And so with Loy, it was just seemed seamless right from the get go. And I feel pretty fortunate that I was able to have that.
Do you have anyone you maybe, or, you know, maybe a couple of people that you maybe consider, you know, maybe like a friendly rival or somebody that you guys always kind of were pushing each other to get to that next level?
Yeah. You know, if you look at the guys that were in Sydney in 2000 and also in Beijing in 2008, there were 3 of us on that team out of 12. It was me and Loy and Tom Hoff. And so Hoff and I, being in the same position, obviously would always kind of scrap and claw, especially the early part of his career. You know, towards Beijing, he had a few ailments and stuff, and his role was a little bit different in Beijing. But still, man, I mean, he got after it every single day. There was a reason why he was our captain in Beijing, because he just was a perfect demonstration of what it took to continue to stay at that level and what it took to be a teammate and how to grind and put in the work. And so, you know, he's probably one of those guys that I always kind of looked up to, and just how he handled himself on the court.
Is there anyone on the team, the current team right now, that you've maybe like talked to or even mentored a little bit, or anyone that you like their game a lot? You know, could be a middle blocker, could be anyone else, any other position?
Yeah. So the guys that are on the team now, I haven't had too much exposure to, besides like Matty Anderson, who I played with on the very tail end of my career. Max Holt was also there. They were like the young guys coming up right as I was getting ready to retire. And so obviously familiar with those guys, but the rest of the guys, like even Micah and the guys that are, and Eric and the guys that are really, really developing themselves into world-class players right now. I don't know personally very much, but, you know, even the Olympics after I retired, I just was 100% gung-ho. I just wished them the best. You know, there's so many. I was just listening to your guys' conversation with Kavika Soji, and he was talking about the games in Rio and how close they were. Now, obviously I was just glued to the TV in those games and how close I'm telling you, I tell people all the time is look, dude, winning gold medal is not easy.
Yeah.
Like there's a recipe for winning a gold medal. Of course it requires all the prep stuff. So like all the work that those guys are putting in, of course it requires all that. But when you get to the games, it's just, you have such a tight time frame for everything to go as planned. You know what I'm saying? So like even Kavika was talking about how in Japan, I mean, they blow out France 3-0 in pool play and they don't even get out of the pool and France goes on and wins the Olympic gold medal. And so it's like, how does that work out? Right. Cause there's all of these little nuances and little things that happen over the course of those 2 weeks. And so you got to be prepared. You got to be a little bit lucky and you obviously have to make the right plays at the right times. And literally most Olympics come down to like two or three or four plays at the right time. And those are the teams that go on and win gold. And it's like, so that margin of error it's like a razor thin.
How do you deal with that kind of pressure? You know, just that margin of error at that level, you know, again, team sport, like you mentioned, you got to lean on each other. You got to have that ounce of luck, that little bit of luck, things got to go your way. How do you just deal with all of that, you know, within a split second before a serve receive happens or, you know, your approach to, you know, to hit, slam a ball down?
Yeah, I know. I think that's kind of the mental side of the game. And I think that's why guys like John Spraw and Hugh were so good at managing guys' mentality and not getting too high, not getting too low, just having that kind of that even heartbeat. When you get on the court, you're obviously confident in what you can do, right? Because you've done it lots of times in the past. So you get that mix of confidence. You get that mix of preparation, right? You put in a lot of work in studying the other teams. What are the tactics look like? Where do they serve in what rotation? Where are they hitting the ball in what rotation? I mean, all of that, particularly as a middle, right? Where you have to kind of digest all of that information because you're kind of the blockhead, right? Everything revolves around you from a defensive standpoint. And there's a lot of information that you're taking on in one point. And so typically you see the teams that are really, really competitive at the Olympic level or at the Olympics are teams that have more veteran guys or guys that at least been there a few times before or a good mix of guys that have been there a few times before, because you need that type of that experience that it really takes to be able to manage and digest all of that information all at once. Because I tell you, Beijing is probably when I was playing my best volleyball, and that was my third Olympics. And I was already getting a little bit older by that time from volleyball standpoint. But the game was a lot slower to me at that point because I had already digested all of these experiences and I kind of knew where things were going, how it was going to happen, because I had learned it from the past. And so I think it's just that broad mix of putting the right team together, having the right mental mentality, and then and having a coaching staff that has the right system that they want to put in place. And luckily for us in 08 in Beijing and that quad, I felt like towards the end of that quad, early part of 07 going into to 2008 in Beijing, we absolutely had that right system and everybody kind of knew their role and played it as well as we could. But again, you know, we needed a little luck here or there, a few points here or there. We were just lucky to be on the right side of those 2 points, and then you go on and win an Olympic gold medal. So,
Hey, you mentioned the latter half of that quad, 07, 08. Great year for the team. Obviously, you know, win gold in Norseca, gold in the World League, FIVB World League, gold, obviously, at the Olympic Games in Beijing. You mentioned the there's not really a script for how, not really a checklist to how to be great. But what was the team doing right that year?
Ooh. You know, you hear a lot of teams talk about how it was like they got hot at the right times and things were clicking. That's kind of exactly how it was for us. But what's interesting about World League, which is VNL now, obviously, it used to be called World League. But that when we won gold that year, it was the first gold that U.S. has ever won in World League. And we're playing in kind of the finals pool play. And I mean, we went five with, so we lost our first match. We played against Serbia and we got crushed. They hammered us. So we had to have a must win match against Poland, who was already kind of thinking that they were already better than us. We ended up beating them in five.
Wow.
So then we go, so this is in Brazil. Then we go in the semifinals against Brazil in Brazil. We beat them 3-0 in Brazil with like 25,000 fans. And then we go on and play Serbia again in the finals, and we ended up beating them 3-1. And so, and then it just seemed like from there, just kind of like rocket shipped. And like, obviously, Hugh put together a really, really great plan that got us moving in the right direction all at once. And then Beijing happened. I felt like we were just really, really ready and prepared to tackle whatever was going to happen to us in those Olympics. Much different type of feeling than any of my previous Olympic games. So.
And really quick before I kind of go into this next question too, I do probably will be leaving. I will be leaving in the next like maybe 9 or so minutes. So if you see me quietly drop off and say bye, it's because I had to go coach my high school team too. So I just don't want to interrupt. But I mean, you know, with that kind of topic still being the frame of mind, did you ever, you know, get or do anything that kind of, you know, recognized or symbolized your memory from, you know, that, or that's just like specific Olympic games, like a tattoo or, you know, a coin or, you know, some sort of, yeah, something.
Yeah. So I was never a tattoo guy, but I always said, if I win a gold medal, I'm going to get a tattoo. That would be the only thing that would give me a tattoo. And then we, obviously at that point, you don't ever think you're going to be a gold medalist. Right. So I thought, whatever, I could say that, but it won't ever happen. And then it happens and you're like, oh, okay. So, yeah, I got the rings, in between my shoulder blades and my back. I got them in color too. And I think it's the fourth ring on the, so it's the 1-2 kind of up down. I think that one's yellow. And so I actually had them make the gold medal, that one. So that one, cool. My yellow one is a gold medal, the shape of the China, of the Beijing gold medal. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was something that was obviously meaningful. Now, of course, I've got more tattoos because that's what happened when you get tattoos. The floodgates start to open.
Yep.
And you're constantly thinking about the next one, which is such a slippery slope.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, it was that obviously is special to me. You know, winning the gold medal obviously opens up a lot of doors. You get to do some cool things. You get to meet really cool people. Like, I had multiple opportunities to kind of sit down and rap with Kobe Bryant, because he was there with the Redeem team. And then we did some extra stuff with the U.S. basketball team afterwards. So we got to see each other quite a few times in a short kind of period of time. And so it was cool to kind of just talk to those guys and get to know them a little bit.
I bet that was a cool experience. I know the team's on a Netflix right now, that documentary.
I know, I saw that.
Insane.
Yeah,
so
it was good.
You're there really first saying, I bet that's even, you know, just there's no words for that one.
It's wild.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, we practiced in the same gym. So like we practiced in the morning, maybe 9 to 11, and then they would come in and start warming up for practice right after. And so like I'm taking off my tape and like Kobe's putting on his tape and you're just sitting on the bench rapping with the guys. And it's just, you know. And they respect you and you obviously respect them because they see us working out there and they're like, dude, you guys are gnarly. And Toby would be like, hey, yeah, we went to your match and we saw you guys play. And it's just cool stuff like that. Cool. Those are the part of the Olympics that are really, everyone that you've had on the show that talks about the Olympic experience, like even Kavika, just because I was just listening to his episode, but how he was talking about the special memory is being there in the opening ceremony with all the athletes. And it's a pretty cool thing to be a part of, and it's hard to express how fortunate you feel in that moment to be able to go through that. And it's just, and for me personally to be able to do it three times is pretty cool. So
yeah, that's incredible, because that only happens one place, where the best of the best are side by side in, you know, their respective sports. And yeah, Kavika talked a lot about that opening ceremony and just walking out and just not being able to prepare yourself really for the emotions that'll hit you when you walk out of that tunnel. Yeah, it's just incredible. That's awesome.
Yep.
Any other like fun memories like that? You mentioned, you know, interacting with the USA team, like anything that sticks out, or, you know, maybe from the Olympic Village too. What was the village like?
The village is obviously pretty cool. Each village is kind of created by each organizing committee. So all the villages are always different. So like Sydney was different than Athens, and Athens was different than Beijing. In Beijing, it was pretty special because that was kind of China's coming out party. So they just pumped tons of money into that. So the village was like immaculate. It looked like a Chinese beautiful garden. There's like a little stream going through it and little bridges that you go over, and they're manicuring all the plants. And it wasn't like that in the other games. In fact, in Athens, so Athens was in 04. And going into Athens, there was this big debate whether they were even going to be ready for the Olympics. Like, they were still building stadiums, like even weeks up to the game and the games. And I remember we got to the village and it was pretty bare bones. Like, the place was nice, but like, it was pretty bare bones. But So we would like go to sleep one night and then wake up and there would be like new trees out in front of the house. Like, where do those come from? You know what I mean? And like, you wake up, you go to sleep, wake up the next day, there'd be like shrubs that they'd put in during the night. And so they were like literally building the village as we were there. So it was kind of funny how things work out that way.
They call you over to come help out with setting up something.
Hey, you're going practice.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Yeah. What? Yeah. So. And you know, kind of staying on Beijing, and you know, if you're not comfortable sharing the story or talking about this, please let me know. But you know, a horrible tragedy. A lot of people know what happened in Beijing at the start with Hugh McCutcheon's family being attacked kind of right at the start. I think it was, you know, day one or two, right before the games kind of got started. But
yeah,
while they were sightseeing, and you know, he had to miss the first three matches, you know, dealing with family stuff and taking care of his family. But you know, how did the team react to that moment? You know, how did the tragedy affect the team, you know, getting prepared for competing on, you know, the biggest stage in sports?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like when we go back and talk about this edge, this raise your edge of margin, and like to have to deal with something like that. I think this tragedy happened the day before the opening ceremony. So you're right. It was like really close to the start of the games. And you know, we first heard about it in practice, and we are obviously devastated for Hugh and his family, because I mean, we all loved Hugh and we also loved his family. Like, Wiz, his wife, is a player, so a lot of us knew her and like were acquainted with her family. And so it was really tough. It really was. You know, we kind of got together and we're like, look, we kind of got two choices here. We could kind of pack it up and be like, this is too hard. Like, we didn't plan on this. This was something we didn't prepare for. You know what I'm saying? Like, how can you? Or we can just, you know, go all in and just figure it out together as a team. I mean, recognizing the fact that we didn't think Hugh was ever coming back the whole game. So we thought he was going to be out, and justifiably, right? He's got,
right,
things are much bigger than volleyball at that time. You know what I'm saying? So, but the thing about Hugh is he was a master preparer. I mean, he had us prepared during those games. We knew we were playing at a high level. We knew we had a good shot if we put it all together. There's only so much, you know, I've been coaching quite a bit since I retired too. And I tell players often that, especially like in playoff situations, high pressure situations, there's only so much you could do as a coach. You know what I mean? The preparation aspects are important. You got to put together good practice plans, and you got to make sure the teams are, everyone knows their role clarity and all that. But like when the whistle blows, there's only so much you could do as a coach. At that time, it's the players to show, it's kind of showtime. Right. It's their time to go manage the match. All I have is 1 minute and a timeout to say, hey, let's adjust here or there. But the 99% of the time in the match, it's them going and making the magic happen. And so that's how we kind of approached it. We're like, look, let's just lean on each other. We know we're good enough. You know, we played our first match against Venezuela, and it was like right after it happened. And we start off super good. Like, we're rolling. Venezuela's probably one of the not the worst teams in our pool. So we're supposed to win. We go up 2-0. I think we won 25-18 both sets. And so we're thinking we're going to roll. And then they all of a sudden just start careering and they pull us all the way to 5. And we're thinking, wow, like we can't lose to Venezuela first match. And so we ended up winning in 5. And then after that, obviously we didn't lose a single match the whole Olympics. That we went undefeated the entire game. So, it was just interesting. It was a good mindset for the guys to be in. Hoff did a really good job as our team captain, just rallying the guys, saying, hey, and it wasn't like this rah-rah moment for Hugh either. It's like, these games we're going to dedicate to the Bachman family. And it was just kind of like, look, the best thing we could do to honor Hugh and his family is just go play our hearts out. Whatever happens, happens. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think that's the mentality. Like, if I'm a player, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to give it all I got, and whatever happens, happens. I mean, the result is just the outcome. It's not really the destination. And I mean, it's the destination. It's not really the journey. So we were focused on one play at a time, coming together as a team, and whatever happens, happens. So
kind of segueing into that moment, what was it like kind of standing up top on that podium, after coming up a little short, your previous two experiences in the Olympics and, given everything that's kind of happened with the team, in Beijing?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people ask me, what does it feel like to win a gold medal? And the only response I ever give people is it feels exactly how you think it feels. Like, it's just a lot of elation. It's a lot of to be honest with you, guys like Loy and Tom and I, who have been there a lot of times. I mean, that was Loy's fourth Olympic Games in Beijing. I, to be honest with you, a lot of it was relief, validation. You put in, dedicated your life, huge chunk of your life up to that point. And doing this and then being able to finally say and talk about that you've actually accomplished what you set out to accomplish, there is a great sense of relief in that. And obviously you have all the whole honor thing as well, representing the US and being on the podium and having the flag raised and the national anthem and all that's really cool, because we never took that for granted either. But it was a special moment that is hard to duplicate. Obviously a lot of emotions going through my mind, and I can't even imagine the amount of range of emotions going through Hugh's mind at that time, because he's on this massive high but also on this massive low at the same time. And just kudos to him being able to manage all that from an emotional standpoint. It's just incredible.
Yeah, an incredible moment. And going back, thank you again for talking on the whole situation in Beijing with the tragedy with Hugh's family. But awesome story just to hear that firsthand from you. And I can only imagine the emotions the whole family or the whole family, yeah, but the whole team is feeling, on top of the podium with, so many things about that moment were great. Like the first gold for the men's team since 88. Everything that happened with Hugh's family, and as you mentioned, you and Loy have been there so many times and come up short. But yeah, just I can only imagine what that moment meant to you guys. And kind of going back to your USA baseball story on the plane, how did you guys celebrate? Were you running up and down the airplane? Or what was that? If you could talk about it, what was the after party like?
Yeah, I mean, we might have went out somewhere. Everybody at that time was a little bit more established. Like David Lee was kind of the young guy on the team.
Oh, wow.
And so the guys had like their family there and their wives there, their kids potentially even there too. And so I'm trying to remember if we did anything specifically together right after we won. I can't remember, but I think that guys had just responsibilities other places. So I don't remember anything specific that we did together after we won, but we're still on a group text thread, and something will happen. Like, it'll be the anniversary of the game, the actual date, and someone will throw out a thing and say, hey, I watched our match on so-and-so, and just, I hope you guys are doing good. And that's, we're already like, I don't know, however many years it is later, 15 years later or something. So I think that experience kind of bonded us all in a way that I obviously something like that, going through an experience like that would do, as you would anticipate and expect. So I look forward to a time when we do get that team back together all together, and we can really celebrate together as a team and what we did, which was, like you said, I mean, it had done been 20 years. We're going into like another 20 years since we last had it. And I said, it's not easy winning gold medals, even when you got tons of talented guys. And I wish, you know, the guys the best in Paris next year, but it's going to be tough, as Kubica talked about. You know what I mean? As you guys talked to him about the teams, like he said, I mean, there'll be 12 teams at the Olympics and probably 10, 8 to 10 of them can win gold. And so how do you overcome that? It's going to be tough. So the guy, we obviously have the talent to do it. Got to have a little luck, like we talked about. And the guy's got to step up and be able to perform in those moments where it's those 3-4 points in every Olympics where they're kind of the decider on who wins and who loses.
Yeah, definitely excited to see that team get to Paris, and obviously have to qualify first, but those qualifiers are coming up soon this year. But excited to see the team kind of bounce back from Tokyo. I know Kubica talked about it wasn't what they had expected, what they planned, obviously, but it's a solid group returning to that team and that gym, and a lot of veteran leadership too. So I think they'll be hungry, and I'm excited to watch them.
Yeah, the pool placement in the Olympics is always a challenge as well. I know that their pool last Olympics was tough. And so there's usually kind of a pool of death. And when you're in that pool, it's a grind, man. I remember in Sydney, we had that, because in our pool play in the beginning, it was the eventual gold medal team, silver medalist, bronze medalist, and fourth place. And those four teams are the four teams that go out of the pool.
Right.
So all four of those teams ended up beating all of the other crossover teams to go gold, silver, bronze, fourth. So that's tough.
Yep. Like you said, you got to have a little luck too.
Exactly.
You mentioned, you know, kind of just talking a little bit more about the celebrations. Were you on any like talk shows afterwards, or what was the like kind of celebration tour for you? Disneyland, any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah. They made me like the Grand Marshal of the Disneyland Parade. My family got to go on there. I have a cool sign that says awesome. You know, celebrating Ryan Millar. It was cool. We got to see some behind the scenes stuff at Disneyland. Obviously, my kids are big Disney fans, so that was really cool for them. I got to throw out the first pitch at Dodger Stadium, threw out the first pitch at an Angels game as well. But that was kind of like we were the whole team together. That was pretty cool. Yeah. The one at Dodger Stadium was funny because I'd obviously never thrown out a first pitch before, so I didn't know the protocol. And it was hot, you know, it's LA and it's hot, you know what I mean? So I was wearing flip-flops. And so I walk out to the mound and I had flip-flops on. So I'm about to throw out the first pitch in flip-flops. And I remember the announcer guy is like, Olympic gold volleyball gold medalist Ryan Millar. And interesting choice in footwear.
Oh no, he called you out on that.
Yeah, I totally did. And I was thinking to myself, like, oh, I didn't, like, you're just, I guess you're supposed to wear some shoes, and I didn't. So still threw it down the middle, so no worries about that.
I was gonna ask how'd it go.
Yeah, it was solid.
Okay, good. And was it right or left-handed? Did you have to
practice? No, that's all right-handed.
All right-handed.
Left-handed would have been bad. Yeah, I was like one of those. I would have gone viral on YouTube.
That's right.
Those are always funny, seeing people go crazy on those.
Yeah.
Who just like throw it like sideways and stuff.
That or but, the other way around, where you see like, I think there was an Olympic gymnast. I can't remember which one, but she did like a backflip at first, right before, and then threw the first pitch.
That's right.
Incredible athlete.
Wasn't that? I think it was Simone Biles, actually.
Probably was.
Yeah. I think it was Simone Biles.
Simone Biles. Yeah.
We got to go on Oprah, which was really cool Oprah was still at the height of her thing. So she had like this really big show where all of the Olympic gold medalists from all the sports came together, and they had the show at the what's the name of the park there in Chicago, right by the lake. Your Chicago listeners will definitely know. But anyways, she set up this huge, massive stage, and she had the show out there at the park and had all the gold medalists there. It was cool to hang out. Again, we got to see the basketball guys again, and like Phelps was there, and obviously he was the big story in the Beijing Olympics.
Right.
And the gymnast girls were obviously there too. And so it was we got to do some really cool stuff after those games.
Yeah, what was it like being on the Oprah Winfrey Show? I know you mentioned that was like kind of the height of Oprah, and you know, was she throwing out, you know, free cars or you know, anything like that?
Yeah, no free cars, but it was just I'm very observant, so I'm like, I always watched people interact with her, and she's got like this, obviously this natural aura about her, and just like when she walks down the hallway, everyone kind of parts, like the Red Sea. It's like, oh my God, like there's Oprah, you know what I mean? And but she, obviously, as you can imagine, just was nice and
yeah,
super prepared to do what she does, because she's, you know, she's Oprah, so she's a pro, and treated us really nice as athletes. And we got our own separate, apart from the actual show, she hosted kind of a separate get together with just the athletes and her. And so we got to like interact and take pictures and do some cool things with her and her staff. And so it was a fun experience. She rented out the entire, this massive hotel, like right downtown Chicago. Like they rented out the whole hotel just for us. So we all had like our own floor pretty much.
Oh my gosh.
That's a massive suite. And we walked in the room and there was this huge basket full of like all sorts of stuff. Like, I don't even know what that time, like an iPod and like gift cards to all these things. And just this huge basket full of stuff, just congratulating us. And so it was cool.
That's so cool. iPod, that's a throwback too.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. I'm dating myself right now.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations on an incredible career that you had, and ending it at the top of the podium too is just phenomenal. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, you guys mentioned this notion of being inducted to the Hall of Fame, the USA Hall of Fame, which is just, it's such a cool honor. And you know, when you start your career with USAV, you never think that you're going to end it in the end being in the Hall of Fame. Of course, you just try to do your best. And, but to be recognized along with Clay Stanley, who obviously had played a long time with, was just really cool. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. Just kind of speaking on that a little bit, we'll go into it. You're going to be awarded the all-time great male indoor athlete at this year's Hall of Fame ceremony in Dallas. What does that honor mean to you? Mean to your career and you know, mean to your family, your legacy?
Yeah. You know, it's a cool honor. I value everything USAV did for me. I know that it takes more than just a group of guys. It really is a village to put the USA volleyball program together. There's a lot of people like you guys that are in the back doing a lot of stuff to help support us and try to make us successful. And so, you know, although a Hall of Fame all-time great player is an individual honor, I don't know how I would not be able to just kind of express gratitude for USA volleyball in general, providing me an opportunity to go play the sport that I love for so long, represent my country, and be able to have the infrastructure to be able to allow me to do that, travel the world with all my best friends at the time. And then to be recognized as an all-time great player is just kind of like a cherry on the top. You know what I mean? It's just a really cool honor, validation for a lot of hard work that I put in and gave USA volleyball for many, many years. I mean, I was on the national team for almost 15 years. So it was to be able to be recognized for that is a special thing. So.
Yeah. Congratulations again on that award. And you're going to be in Dallas, I'm assuming, correct?
I will be in Dallas. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Enjoy the ceremony. Enjoy being with your family and celebrating that honor. And like you mentioned, really cool to be in that same class of Clay as well with those ties. Absolutely. That's really fun.
Yeah, he was a beast.
Yeah. think that's an understatement. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome.
He had the hardest jump serve I've ever seen. I don't know if anyone has ever hit the ball harder than that guy. He's a special volleyball player. Just, he would take over matches from the service line, which very few people can do. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
You mentioned you're coaching now. What have you been doing since you retired from the national team? What are you up to now?
Yeah, once I knew it was time to hang them up, I was trying to figure out what was next, and bumped into an old friend of mine who mentioned some consulting work that he was in. So in the business world. So pretty quickly after I retired, joined a global culture management, change management consulting firm. And so I've been working, I'm a senior partner at our firm now, been there now almost 11 years. So we work with organizations on helping them more effectively manage their culture. So we help them with culture management work and consulting work. And it's really fun. Good stuff. A lot of fun. Cool transition from athletics into the business world. I know I keep bringing it up because I just listened to it, but Kibika talked about this kind of the athlete transition. And I feel like I got pretty lucky with this one, going right into this type of role, which is a really good role for an athlete like myself that's kind of transitioning. So, but yeah, it's been great. And then there's a local junior college team near my home here in San Diego, Miramar College, that I am an associate head coach for, and been doing that the last couple of years. It's been a lot of fun to get back into the men's game, even at the junior college level. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I imagine that, mentioned just the transition, but I imagine that transition from, high level athletes into something like culture management is pretty seamless too. And I imagine you draw a lot from your experience into what you do for that work, for that kind of work. But yeah, I guess kind of what are some examples of, do you talk about your time as an athlete, or how do you work that into your job?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it was one of the main reasons why I was drawn to the work, because there were so many ties that I can make between, trying to build the best team and trying to be the best team and actually what that takes within the business world as well. How to produce excellence, like what are all the pieces that you need to do to put in place, and how do you solve the puzzle? And I was actually really surprised at how close the business world really is in organizations trying to produce excellence themselves, and how many connective tissue pieces there were. So yeah, I talk about my experience at the Olympic stage quite often, because there are so many things that we talk about. Our work is specifically focused on helping organizations create a culture of accountability. And from an athletic standpoint, there was an easy connective tie to my work and what we did on the national team. So, and other professional teams that I played on. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Just seems like the perfect fit and awesome.
It really was there for you. Super fortunate. Yeah. Super fortunate to get involved in it and to do it as long as I have. So.
And you mentioned you're coaching at Miramar College. Yeah. Did I get that right? Miramar College. Okay. Yeah. Do you ever get back on the court with those guys, are you still playing volleyball at all?
Yeah, I mean, recreationally I'll play. I still enjoy playing. Obviously I am a lot older and my body will tell me that often. And so, I'll mess around with them every once in a while and I'll pay for it. So, when we go play on the beach, I'll be more inclined to go practice. We have really nice sand courts at the college too for the, we have a women's beach team. And so, if we go out there and do some cross training and play on the sand, I'll mix it up with them. It's pretty fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you're going to be in Dallas for the Hall of Fame. Clarence is there. There's the Open Nationals adult tournament.
The Open Nationals going on right now.
I'm sure we can find a dinosaur team for you. Hey, Loy played in it for a long time. I remember he's still playing in it, but I know he played in it for quite a while, and he held his own out there.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did. And I'm sure he paid for it.
Yeah, we still need to have Loy on the podcast, so we'll definitely bring that up when we do. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, congratulations again on earning the that honor, and have a great time in Dallas at the ceremony. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm sure you'll run into a lot of, you know, teammates or friends just that you've met through the volleyball world. So have a great time, and congratulations again.
Thanks, Ethan. Thank you.
Yeah,
really appreciate it.
Of course. Anything else that you'd like to share or talk about before we let you go here? Anything we left on the table?
Yeah, not really. I mean, if anyone wants to connect with me, I'm on Instagram. I'm also on LinkedIn. Just search for me. You'll be able to find me if you want to reach out and ask me anything. Yeah, no problem. You guys are doing a cool thing here. This is, I know you guys have been doing it for a while, so keep it going. So we need as much volleyball content as we can have. So
thank you. Yeah, we just hit our 2 years
very
doing
cool.
this. So and
for you guys.
Your episode will be episode 65. So approaching that triple digit number. We're excited.
Wow. Big milestone.
That's right. Yeah. Well, thank you again. And I'm sure we'll have you out at another event too soon. Clarence will get on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, no problem, Steven. Everyone else, Clarence, thanks.
What a great conversation with Ryan. Really, really thankful to have him on to share his Olympic stories. A lot of great memories that he's had going to three Olympic games, a lot of great moments that he's been able to be a part of, and happy to you know, hear him talk about, you know, ending his Olympic career, you know, at the highest peak, on top of the podium, winning gold in 2008 with that team. And such a special, you know, moment, such an emotional moment for that entire team, that he talked about just everything that the team went through, you know, getting to that moment, including, you know, the tragedy with Hugh McCutcheon's family. Yeah, just loved hearing Ryan talk about, you know, the team's mentality around that moment. And, you know, of course they wanted to do it for Hugh, but, you know, they wanted to do it for the team and everything that they went through getting to that, everything they went through that quad to get to that moment. And, you know, the best way to honor Hugh and his family was just to play volleyball and do their best and you know, implement all that training that they went through, from Hugh. And, yeah, just, I can only imagine the emotions that they were feeling on top of that podium, in a way.
Even little things. I mean, not so little now, too, because he's actually got it a lot more, too. But, you know, just the whole, yeah, if we do this, get a tattoo.
Gotta have that. That's right. Yeah.
And he's like, oh, wait, I got to do this now. Now, just like anybody who gets the first tattoo, they got a lot more. But, I mean, just literally just one of those individuals that just has stories for days and, you know, can tell them with such passion and remembrance and feeling, you know, just kind of helps you just kind of paint that whole scene there too. It was a really, 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 really great conversation. And it was like that at Mountain Classic this past December as well.
Oh, yeah.
Just meeting him for the first time, just so personable, just, you know, up and close, letting people kind of, you know, see the medal, you know, that he won and all that stuff. And it was really, really, really great too. It was like, I think I like kind of, I forgot to bring this up during your interview, but anybody that he asked to wear, he was like, you can wear it if you win your own. But you let everybody else kind of touch and feel it there too. But I mean, it was like pretty unique to kind of have that and then give like the boys that are competing there like that motivation there as well. So it was pretty cool to kind of see their reaction to. They're like, oh, wow. All right, let me go win this qualifier so it could be a road to the Olympics. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, you definitely have to have Ryan out to another event here soon. Well, we'll have the Mountain Classic in Denver this year, so not too far from his old stomping grounds. I know he's in California now, but yeah, that's
the Atlantic City Showdown.
We'll be there.
Oh, that's right too. Yeah,
twice a year next year.
Yeah, yeah. Just such a awesome conversation with Ryan. You'll have to maybe get him set up with the squad in Dallas at Opens. You know, he mentioned, you know, the slippery slope of tattoos. Maybe you and him go out and get tattoos together.
we'll see. We'll put that on the list.
There you go. Yeah. But Yeah. Thank you again, Ryan, for taking the time to sit down and talk with us before, of course, the Hall of Fame ceremony. I hope you enjoy that with your friends and family. I hope it's kind of like a little volleyball reunion, seeing old teammates and, you know, friends through the volleyball community. And as we heard just yesterday, the Hall of Fame ceremony is sold out. So it's going to be a great time, a great celebration for all those in attendance. So thank you again, Ryan, for talking with us and sharing all your stories, talking about your background too. And of course, you can follow Ryan on Instagram at RyanMillar9. If you have any questions or just kind of want to pick his brain a little bit about volleyball or even in his new career now with going into kind of business culture and training businesses into developing good culture. So if you're interested in that, hit him up.
Now, without further ado, I think it's time for upcoming events with Divine Steven.
I feel like I need a shirt for that or something. Or a mug. Divine Steven.
You play it open with your name? Yo, you're not Steven Weston.
There we go.
Divine Steven.
Yeah, name on the back of the jersey. That's awesome.
Especially giving a semi-pro vibe. You know? Jackie Moon.
You know. Hey, there was a... Oh, what was... What was this? Was it Thurman? No, not Thurman. There was a Munson from that movie.
Oh, there is.
I forgot his first name.
I got to do some digging after this. But yeah, it's going to be...
Was it Twiggy? No. Is that right? Does that sound right?
Or was he another character?
Twiggy might have been a different character. Yeah. We'll have to look that up. Look that up. I'll let you look that up while I go through events here.
Go ahead.
Upcoming events, we have the NTDP Beach Spring Training Series May 19th through the 20th in Manhattan Beach, California. We have the USA Volleyball Beach Tour Old Dominion Tidewater Summer National Qualifier May 20th in Virginia Beach, Virginia. The Mad Sand Juniors Qualifier May 20th in Plano, Texas. The NTDP Beach Accelerator, Puget Sound Region, May 20th in Snohomish, Washington. The USA Volleyball Beach Tour Lone Star GCVA Galveston National Qualifier, May 20th in Galveston, Texas. Good luck to everyone competing in those events. Shout out to all the USA Volleyball regions for setting up and hosting those events. More details on all upcoming events can be found at usavolleyball.org.
By the way, Twiggy Munson.
Was it Twiggy? Okay.
Twiggy Munson. You called it.
Nice. I thought that was right, but yeah, it could have been a different character. I always wanted like a Munson semi-pro jersey. I haven't pulled the trigger on it, but maybe I got to do it. I forgot about that until now. All right. On to the pro side of things. We have the Norseca Beach Cayman Islands May 18th through the 21st in Grand Cayman Islands. The Beach Pro Tour Futures May 18th through the 20th. That's in, I think it's pronounced Cervia, Italy. The Beach Pro Tour Women's Futures Madrid, May 18th through the 20th, and you guessed it, Madrid, Spain. The Norseca U21 Women's Pan American Cup, May 21st through the 28th, in Mexico. Off to you, Clance.
Now, on the other pro side, I'm just kidding. Remember, listeners, you can listen, rate, review, share with your friends, families, teammates, uncles, brothers, aunties, cousins, nephews, nieces. Did I miss anybody? But it really, 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 really helps the podcast grow and reach new listeners throughout not only the volleyball community, but the podcast community in general. And you can also check out our video episodes on our website and on YouTube. We thank you all for your continued support. Big things coming this year, Road to 100. But if you know a club that should be featured on our story, well, repeat that. We're going to leave that in too. If you guys know a club that should be featured or a story that we should talk about, you can definitely email us at the USAV show at usav.org.
or you can just give us feedback, let us know how we're doing, or just let us know of any future topics you want to hear about. We are an open book. So if you want to talk about anything, let us know. Scratch that. Almost anything. Let us know. Well, yeah, until next time, thank you all for listening to the USA Volleyball Show. We hope you enjoyed this Hall of Fame episode. We are the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson, produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producer is Laura Fawcett. Our marketing lead is Bree Jaycox. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.